us for another intriguing edition of the Stack Pack Reboot. What's up, guys? What's up, guys? Stack Pack back for another week. David, as always, joined by Eli and Dallas.
What's up?
And Dan sitting across from me.
Oh, it's been a while since we've done this. I feel like we say that every episode.
Yeah, because we suck.
Because we do suck.
Hey, we're just busy. Sorry we're not full-time podcasters.
Well, yeah, it's been busy since Thanksgiving. Damn, it's been a while. Anyway.
2020 be crazy, y'all.
Yeah, we're here to cover season two of the... Well, series... What is it? Part two. Volume two. Fuck. We're here. We're covering volume two of Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix. Episode six, Stolen Kids. That's what we're going to be discussing today. It's a pretty shitty, sad story. And there's not much updates either. And not much.
I would have thought.
Did you find any extra details? Did you do any research? No.
I would have thought like there would be some buzz about this one. I feel like this is like really solvable.
Yeah. It's sad. Let's jump into it and then we'll talk some more about some other missing children and some, there's a couple things that Unsolved Mysteries, barely touches on, but yeah, let's just get into it. We're going to Harlem in 1989, back in the late 80s. Harlem's pretty cute now, parts of it. You know, Harlem's nice now.
Gentrified.
Yeah. You can go and get...
You can get greasy skinny fries with a garlic aioli.
Yeah. Mm. Garlic aioli.
You're making me hungry.
Yeah. Gentrification has hit hard. But in the 80s, Harlem was, as they say in the episode, violent and rough and... But it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't so much Harlem. I think that was just all of New York.
Well, yeah, lots of the boroughs. I mean, even Times Square. Yeah, 80s Times Square was wretched. It's not. It was not like the colorful Old Navy commercial that it is today.
Old Navy commercial.
Yeah.
When I think of 80s New York now, I think about Don Cheadle doing uncopious amounts of white powder.
Black Monday. Yeah, or just like well, I guess. The scary parts of New York are always portrayed in 80s movies. Like, I always think of Jason Takes Manhattan, which is a shitty title because he's literally in Manhattan for like 20 minutes at the end of the movie. But like, man, it's just like covered in garbage. Like everything.
It's like Jason.
It's a Jason movie. I didn't realize they did a Jason movie where he's in Manhattan.
Yeah, but most of the movie is a bunch of dumb college kids taking a boat to Manhattan. They get killed off, and then he's like in Manhattan for the last 20 minutes. And I think there's only one shot. I think they only actually filmed the one scene in Times Square, actually in New York.
The rest of it was like filmed off some like, yeah, they had,
the rest was in the deep woods of Canada.
They had to save their money somehow.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So, Harlem was especially rough, but they do say it was a close knit community. You know, people working hard, lots of kids, you know, just I just picture, for some reason, I'm just picturing Hey Arnold, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder if they went to PS 118. that it's weird that all the schools are boringly just
football head
public school number blah blah blah. Like that, those are really how the schools are in New York.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is PS 64, cool.
I think at that point, do they even have mascots?
I don't know. I don't know anything about public school in New York.
All I know is that they're called PS, and my brother lives next to one.
Yeah.
So
what was the one on Hey Arnold? You said PS 118.
Yeah.
Is there really a PS 118? I wonder.
Probably. I don't think there is. My brother has looked into this. I don't think there is because
he's really into Hey Arnold.
Because we grew up with it, and they never explicitly say that they're in New York, but it's like beyond obvious. So, but it's kind of interesting. They never like say New York City. Anyway, this isn't the Hey Arnold podcast. So yeah, close knit community, and the first mother of an abducted child we're going to be talking about is Allison Dansby. Her and her family lived in the Martin Luther King Towers. She had like cousins and sisters, and her mom all lived in these buildings. And if you've never been, there's these, well, they call them projects, but there's lots of these areas in New York where there's just like humongously tall, like, you know, fucking 15, 16, 24 buildings that all, sorry, 24 floor buildings that all look the same. And they just house just a bunch of, lower income affordable housing. And they're just, it's just literally like apartments stacked on top of each other. Like, you know,
yeah.
lots and lots of people in not that many square miles.
So it's kind of like Ready Player One, just less cool.
Yeah, way less
cool. I never saw that.
It's good.
It's a movie.
It's fine. It does. Spielberg did it. It's got the Spielberg heart. It's got a great score by the guy who did the Back to the Future music. It's got some winning things to it. But yeah, it's also...
It's a movie.
So Allison Dansby's 26 and she's got two sons, LaVon, and who is 3 years old, and Christopher, who is two. So they're both toddlers. Christopher is who we're going to be focusing on. His nickname was Choo Choo, and that's how his aunt and mom refer to him when they're telling the story. Of course, he was a sweet boy. I mean, there's not much to say. Obviously, this kid goes missing, but there's not much to say. Like, you know, everybody says how nice and perfect missing people were. I mean, these were toddlers. He was a smiley, adorable baby. Like, okay, you know,
yeah. We
get it. It sucks. That's the only way to explain it. Cute baby liked to play, liked to giggle, big smile. So Thursday, May 18th of 1989, her and Christopher are going to the park. They're riding down the slide.
And just to be clear, this is the park right in their community, right? Like right in between all the little projects.
Yeah, yeah. Surrounded kind of like around the buildings. They would do this all the time. They'd go to the park. Caroline, who's the aunt, who also tells us some of the story, was there with her kids. And their mom was there. And so they said there was about five of them watching the kids play and stuff. They're all sitting on the bench watching the kids, like I said, when the two sisters leave the kids with the grandma to go to the store to get some snacks and chips or whatever for the kids to eat while they're playing. When she came back, she saw the rest of the kids, and Allison asked where Christopher is, and the grandmother's like, oh, he's right there. They're all here, and they couldn't find her. And that's when the search ensues. She starts freaking out. People start helping her look. They call the police, and like the investigator says, this is like an all hands on deck police situation. But they do say immediately how difficult it is to just look for this little kid when, like we said, there's building after building, 14 stories each building with like, you know, 20 something apartments on each floor. Like it's an overwhelmingly large amount of places this person could be in an overwhelmingly small, like, square mileage area. So one minute the kid's there, the next minute he's gone. And these first minutes are super crucial with missing kids, but like we said, it's just an overwhelming task. They start asking everybody on the streets if they see anything. They're looking for blood or any indication of struggles or violence or anything like that. Also, 24 blocks were searched with a helicopter as well. There was a lake nearby, so they had a scuba team in there just looking to maybe the kid fell in. They got a dog. The dog tracked the scent down the street, and then it ended right before 110th Street. And when that's when the dog lost the scent. So I mean, there's just no leads, just nothing. Family custody connections. They look at the dad, who is in Florida, not in the picture. He goes down there and answers questions, and, you know, his story checks out, apparently. Allison had a drug problem. They barely skip over that. I found some articles that say that Unsolved Mysteries skipped over a theory that a lot of people cling to, which is that her being a drug addict meant that she was neglectful and somehow she's not telling the full story, but that's not really looked into the Unsolved Mysteries, and I feel like for good reason, right?
Yeah, and also, maybe it would have been different had this been like a one-off, but I think the fact that it happens again.
Yeah, and also that she was surrounded with her family and
yeah. She wasn't the only one there. There was five other people.
Yeah. Like, maybe if she's alone with the kid and she's, like, fucked up on drugs, she might, like, fall asleep for maybe 5 minutes and then freak out and be like, oh, God. 1 minute's there, 1 minute's not. But, you know, there's so many other people there. It's just, it doesn't ring truth that her drug addiction would have anything to do with this. And they don't get into any specifics of what kind of drugs these were. But I don't really think it matters. But nonetheless, this fuels the speculation that she might have had something to do with it. So cut to 3 months later. Let's talk about the second mom. Her name is Rosa Glover. Her son was named Shane. He was 19 months old, so not even 2 years.
Yeah, and this mother says that he couldn't even talk yet.
This one makes me weep, man. It's so sad.
Yeah, this lady, like, so the first lady lived in this building with her family. And there, she had another kid, and there was nieces and nephews. And this lady, and Rosa, the second lady, seemed like she was more on her own. This was her only kid. She thought she couldn't have children. So, yeah, he was kind of the special, what did she call him?
She called him like her.
Yeah, my special boy. So it's really heartbreaking hearing her story. At one point, while she's in the park, she just breaks down and starts crying, and it's really rough. I just want to give her a hug.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough for any parent, but when you think that you can't have children, and it's some kind of a miracle, and then for something like this to happen, it's really brutal.
Especially if one of the theories is correct, that it's somebody else that couldn't have children who abducted a child, you know, like the story we'll be talking about a little later in the episode. It's like, oh, somebody who thought they couldn't have a child has a child and is stolen from someone else who couldn't have a child. I don't know.
Like in the movie Run?
Oh, which one's that? I've seen that. Shit. I've heard that. Remind me about what that movie is about.
It's got Sarah Paulson. It's brand new on Hulu. Sarah Paulson and the girl in the wheelchair and her daughter's in the wheelchair.
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, then. I won't say anything. Kind of gave away. It's great. It's great. Sarah Paulson from American Horror Story. She's always good.
Yeah.
It's a Hulu movie. Yeah. It's a really good thriller. It's got like Misery vibes. It's like Misery mixed with The Act. That's the best way to explain that movie. Remember The Act about what's her fate about that true story?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a Misery meets The Act in a 90 minute tight thriller. It's really good. Yeah. That's on Hulu. She explains the kid as a super smiley toddler as well. He's adorable in the pictures because they didn't cut his hair and she just kind of braided it.
Yeah.
He's a cute little kid.
Jocelyn used to watch a little boy and a little girl, their siblings, and the little boy had hair very much like that where they let it grow and then they braided it. And even Maddox, when he saw him, he's Maddox's age and they're in the same grade and he's like, hey, that looks like CJ.
Mm.
She said she wanted to cut it when he was 2, and she got real sad because she never got to.
She never got around. Yeah, she never made it. So on her days off, she would go to the park with Shane, and it was always crowded, of course, because it's the same park. When she starts, the first thing she says in the episode is like, man, like, if I would have known that this kid got abducted from this park, I definitely would not have even taken him there.
Yeah, and that's crazy. 3 months later, I'm baffled that that word hadn't circulated that much that this little boy was missing from there. You would think just the way that they made the manhunt sound, like when he went with the search party, I shouldn't say manhunt, the search party for when the first boy went missing. They said that it went for blocks.
Yeah. But at the same time, I feel like in New York, it could be easy to miss what that's about, you know, just walking, minding your own business. And you're just like, oh, okay, there's cops searching, there's helicopters.
Yeah, I guess you did say that. And there was a lot of people, and they did preface everything by saying that putting you in that time and space where there was a lot going on at that time. There was always like police officers arresting people and stuff. So, yeah, you're right.
So she, as soon as they get to the park, these two bigger kids want to play with Shane. And she said no at first. She said that the kids were approximately 10 and 6, a 10-year-old girl and a 6-year-old boy. So roughly around those ages. And they insisted on playing with Shane, even though she said no. But then she just gave in and let them play. She says she sits down on the bench and just looks at the man next to her and then turns around, and then she couldn't find Shane again. But it's weird. I found this other article that was talking about how she had a conversation with this man and that he had like scars on his arm and that he might have said something about kids going missing. But it's weird that that's not in the Unsolved Mysteries episode. And, I just don't know if there's any truth to it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they did say that they thought it was a ploy. They thought that it was that these kids were sent, which is something that happens. They send out kids to kind of let the parents guard down and let the kids guard down. And then all of a sudden they get taken.
Right.
They're like a part of the ruse, I guess.
They should find those kids now and ask them again.
Yeah.
But they cleared the kids. They talked to them. They said that they went to another part of the park and left the boy there. And, because when she started looking for Shane, she ran into the kids and the kids were like, oh no, like, you know, we left him over there and we went over here.
Question. Because
they were walking like back into the play area, which is.
Yeah. Question though. The child in question was 18 or 19 months old.
Yeah.
You don't just take a 19-month-old child to another part of the park and just like, oh, well, we were done playing, so we just left him out in the field.
Yeah, we just left them there.
Well, but see, that's what's confusing is she says that the kids seem like they were coming back into the playing area. So yeah. they left them.
So where did they go?
Yeah. So they say they just like, they left
and of
them
course,
and they left him and went to go play somewhere
if you
else.
If you think about the kids getting an incentive, right? Like let's say that let's say something nefarious did happen, hypothetically. And this guy was part of it and the kids were part of it. Obviously, the parents of the kids were going to be part of it too. If they're a part of it, they're going to be getting paid somehow. They're not just going to let a kid go missing just for funsies.
Yeah,
they're not going to let just some random stranger like, "Hey, kid, do you want to help me kidnap a child?" No, they're going to pay money, and I'm pretty sure they paid pretty handsomely. So you would think that it would give the parents every reason to say no. Like, our kids are good kids. Like, we don't know what happened to your kid.
Yeah, you better lie to those police.
Yeah.
So everyone in the park is helping them look again, and then another search happens, and that's when the cops are like, what the fuck is going on? You know, the similarities are too crazy. The mom says the cops got a tip that the boy was buried under this building, or like in this abandoned building. But I read another article that said that somebody called her. Maybe, I don't know. I feel like all the other information was like not told from the actual person. So it's like,
where did you read this?
Just like looking up like Mashable and fucking, I don't know, Men's Health. Like all these weird websites do fake dives on
fake
every
news
case.
Sites. I see fake news.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like these random websites that like try to do a little bit of research on every case that Unsolved Mysteries does. And
no, I know.
I'm most of them are unhelpful. Or just like the details are too foggy. So, yeah, but they go to this building and they fucking ended up tearing down the whole building. Cause I guess it was decrepit anyway. And they couldn't find any evidence of any of these, toddlers' bodies. She said this is the first time she ever let her kids play with anybody else. And yeah, like you were saying, kids acting as decoys. Cause these kids were, checked out. They were thoroughly vetted. The parents also were checked out, and they couldn't come up with anything from those leads. They put out a $30,000 reward, and there was like a police van with a bullhorn going around the neighborhood asking people for information. Allison, the first mom, talks about remembering them starting to take it very seriously after the second boy. And just like those police cars with the bullhorn, she'll never forget that. So this is kind of once we get into the, this is where we get into some theories. They think that there could have been a baby selling ring. And we've got enough lost loves to know. But this is the 1980s. It's just, I don't know. It's an interesting theory, but no evidence. Of course, there's no bodies, so there's no leads. There's no crime scene.
Yeah.
Some investigators think the boys are probably still alive. That, like we said, it could have been a distraught wannabe mother, I should say. Mother-to-be.
I think kind of that's where I'm falling. I kind of feel like there was – I don't think that they
– You think they grew up together? You think it was the same lady?
I think they did. I think it had to be.
Yeah.
I don't know. But on the other hand, they could have been sold to another family or something.
Yeah, it's like these crazy people that can't have kids, I guess. That's sad.
But I mean, just look at the orphan trains of the 1920s.
Yeah, but it's they're going to grow up in the 90s, right? Because this happened in, what, 89?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
they'd be 30. Now, they'd be my age.
Right now, you would need a birth certificate, a social security card. You'd need all that stuff. So.
Yeah. Unless they, like, stole identities instead of just forging stuff. Like, we're going to talk about Carlita White. This is a pretty famous story they mentioned in the episode. She was taken from Harlem Hospital in 1987.
Yeah, and I remember hearing about this. Yeah. I don't remember where, but I remember hearing about it.
Yeah, Carlita White. It was an Unsolved Mysteries. Didn't Unsolved Mysteries?
Yes.
Yeah, it was like a plea, like one of those like urgent things, wasn't it? Or no, because the show technically wasn't on in 87 yet. But I think Unsolved Mysteries originally covered it. So anyway,
have we covered it yet?
I think maybe, but anyway, just a refresher, 1987, these parents bring their like brand new baby, like days old, right? They bring her into the hospital because she's got a 104 degree temperature. And then there, a woman dressed as a nurse was really nice to them. And during a shift change, she snuck out with this baby. She straight up stole the baby. And then 23 years later in 2011, Carlita White is discovered because she's pregnant and she's trying to get health insurance. And they tell her that her birth certificate like is a forgery. Like, so that probably would happen unless they did the thing where they just like stole somebody's identity. Maybe who is dead. Sometimes people like steal identities of dead children and like,
mm-hmm.
I don't, it seems confusing, but I guess if you move enough states and stuff, I don't know, especially in the 80s maybe, but I feel like it would be pretty hard for that to like to do that now. Yeah, so this lady was living as Nettie Nance, and they were like, your birth certificate's a forgery. So she did some information, she did some digging, and she looked up missing children and missing babies, and the picture of Carlita White looked exactly like her baby. So she like looked into it. The lady's name was Ann Petway, who stole her. And she was apparently already in jail for like parole violation. And then she gets charged with kidnapping. I want to know what happened to her. Like how much time she got. And if Nettie Nance, AKA Carlita White, still like calls her mom or respects her or.
Yeah, that's gotta be weird, right? The weird dynamic.
Yeah. She straight up stole that child. So the parents still have hope. They believe that, you know, that somewhere, somehow, someday they could be reunited with their boys. And then they talk to the age progression artists. They show those guys. And he has a really poetic sentence that says, he's like, unfortunately, a lot of these kids are growing up on our computer screens. And it's just tragic. And those guys have gotten so good. Like he said,
yeah,
like
they look so good, right?
Yeah, like how he had a picture of the mom as reference, and he was kind of going off her age progression and how she's aging. And
so you're right. We did cover this. This is a season – I think it's season 3, episode 13.
Yeah. That
we covered it.
I don't think it was like a long case. Oh,
it's season 1. It's season 1, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sounded familiar. Unsolved Mysteries covering itself. But I mean, I guess it's like, hey, we reported this here. This is like a good example of this. Let's go over some theories. I'm using this Bustle article about this episode just as a jumping off point so we can discuss some of these theories. Adoption conspiracy. Do we like that? Just people.
I think it's possible.
Stealing these kids It just seems so, like, two people in the same area, two kids in the same area.
Yeah.
So specific. I feel black boy, like, you know, toddlers that are black boys. It's very specific, you know?
Yeah, I feel like it's not that, only because if it was this sophisticated baby selling or baby adoption, I feel like they would be smart enough to, like, let's be in different areas.
I
feel like this is somebody that either lived there or was from there that knows the area, that knew that this was a heavy, like a densely populated area.
What if it was an affluent person that couldn't have kids and was like, you know, I'm going to go into a poverty stricken area and just observe and just take a kid or two?
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying it was the same person, and I feel like they're not doing it because they have, I don't know.
So Deputy Chief Ronald Feinrich had this to say about the, about that possible, adoption ring. We've linked the children's abductions, but not to the same person. And that's what he told the New York Times in 1989, cryptically saying they were questioning two suspects who were two black men, similar only in their dreadlock hairstyles. He went on to mention a baby selling ring as a possible cause for abductions. So that's the statement that kind of alluded people to think maybe that has something to do with it. But Elaine Rosenfield, who's head of an adoption agency, said, this is kind of a weird thing. She pushed back on this theory, said, it's hard to imagine, she told the Associated Press bluntly. There is a black market for white babies, but for black babies, I don't think so. Jeez. Oof. I mean, this was the 1980s, like, but yeah, it's kind of, I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty,
I didn't like reading it out loud.
It would have been funny if we got mad at you, like, ew, David, don't say that.
I don't think so. No, she's like, that's what Elaine said. She works for an adoption agency. I feel like she'd be sweeter. So another theory is that it's drug related. Catherine Uncino, who's an adoption director, suggested to the AP this theory. I've not heard of kidnapping any children of that age to satisfy the wishes of adoptive couples. I can't picture the end result of a kidnapping being adoption, she said. People have used babies as fronts for illegal activities. Children are being sold for drugs, which is weird. I don't understand. I don't know. The family member took them thing, we kind of ruled that out. But, I mean, just statistically, abduction by strangers is rare, as we know. I mean, I always get the Amber Alert notifications on my phone, and when I do look into them, it's always like, you know, the dad of the estranged mother, like, taking the baby.
Yeah, taking it, like to be
to another state or another town. It's usually
that. Yeah, and it's like, you can't have my child.
Yeah. The worst case scenario, of course, is a serial killer theory.
Right, but there's no body.
Right.
So that's what kind of throws me off.
But see, so this Bustles is the one that says, that has the tidbit about Glover actually receiving a call. After the kidnapping, Glover told police that she received a phone call saying her son was buried in an abandoned building, which turned out to be false. Investigators did look into whether it was a serial killer or a pedophile who was abducting children, but they couldn't find any solid proof that this was the case. It's interesting to note that in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, however, Glover says that she says they got a tip. Or we got a tip. No, I'm pretty sure she says there was a tip. They got a tip. She didn't say somebody called her and told her that her son was buried in a building. That's so much more chilling. A lot of people have linked Dansby's and Walker's cases, the two boys' cases, to a person named Andre Bryant, who was 6 weeks old when he went missing in 1989 in Brooklyn. But there's too many inconsistencies. Like, the situations were so different that it's just, it doesn't hold up that they would be connected. But yeah, none of these kids were ever found. It's kind of and it's not really, like you said, it's not really looking great anymore, especially, like you said, you know, fingerprints and DNA and
Yeah, it's got to be tough.
Yeah.
Like, that's the stealing identity is not easy, I don't think. Like, I feel like you need to know where to look, and then sometimes you have to pay for it. You have to pay for, like, documents, things of that nature, like stuff that has their name on it that shows that it's a legitimate, you know, birth certificate or things like that. What do you think personally?
Personally, I think an affluent person just kidnapped two children and,
like, that doesn't care. Like, oh, they're poor. They don't need these children.
Not like doesn't care. Just be like, oh, well, like, you know, maybe I'm doing their family a favor because I'm going to be able to provide their child with a better life. When you're told you can't have a kid and you desperately want a kid, you will do some fucking crazy things.
Yeah, you're right.
So we kind of wanted to end the episode with a couple of good versions of these stories where kids are found after years and years. So this article is from The Insider. It's called 12 Incredible Stories of Children Who Were Kidnapped and Escaped. But we're going to highlight just three that I thought were similar enough and that they were, you know, that it was years and years. So the first one is a girl named Camilla Mobley, who vanished when she was just hours old.
Wow.
She was abducted by Gloria Williams on July 10th of 1998 from University Medical Center in Jacksonville, Florida. Williams had driven from her South Carolina home to the Florida hospital Mobley was in after suffering a miscarriage. She smuggled the infant out of the hospital in her purse. Jesus. And for 18 years, Mobley lived in South Carolina with Williams, her husband, and her other kids as Alexis Manigio. When Mobley was 16, she wanted to get a job, and Williams was forced to explain why Mobley didn't have a valid certificate or social security. So for the next year, they lived with the secret until the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children received an anonymous tip and notified the police in January of 2017. The DNA match confirmed that Mobley was indeed the missing baby. Mobley has a strained relationship with her birth mother, Shanara, but is close to her father and grandmother. She has also been vocal in her support for Williams, whom she still calls mom. So that's a story there where
yeah, she kept that relationship.
Yeah, even though the lady stole her. It's so crazy. You want to do the other
one? Yeah, so I do know this one. Did JC Lee Dugard. She was missing for 18 years and she was finally rescued. She was grabbed off the street and she was near her home. And this happened at Lake Tahoe, California on June 10th, 1990. So she was just 11. Her captor was Philip Garrido and his wife, Nancy Bonagaria. Garrido had previously been in jail. He kept Dugard in a shed in his backyard, like in their home, which was 3 hours away from in Antioch County, California. So he had held her captive and like abused and raped her for years. And actually, sadly, she ended up having two daughters because of these encounters with Garrido.
What? So Garrido, I wonder if this is what Room is based on.
Yeah, I think so. So Garrido was caught when he showed up to the UC Berkeley campus with his two daughters. So he took them out. So he went to UC Berkeley to ask for permission to host an event, and he ended up taking his two daughters with him. And his erratic behavior, he was just acting really weird. The police officers asked to meet with him because of his behavior, and that's when Dugard had introduced herself as Alyssa, and the truth was actually revealed that Garrido had actually taken her. And it was under questioning when this happened. That's how they found out. So it was all because of him taking his daughters out.
But these two daughters were the daughters he had with the girl he has locked up.
That he had locked up in the shed.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is I remember looking at this. If you go to Google Maps, if you find where he lived, if you type in his address, you can go to, you know, you could do like Street View. Google Maps, his van actually followed the Google Map truck for a little while. There's a couple screenshots that I remember, like he followed it out. Like you could see when the Google car passes his house, the van is parked in the driveway, like rear. And then as the Google car drives, he ends up following it. Like, he pulls out of his driveway. I remember finding that. It was crazy.
But what if it was just sheer coincidence that he was leaving his house at the same time that a Google vehicle was driving by?
It could be, but it's pretty creepy that the guy in this that's driving this van kidnapped a woman, and this all happened before she was found.
Yeah, maybe it's like, oh, shit, then maybe they got a picture of it. That's crazy. That sounds a lot like Room. That movie's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
So this story, our last little story, is a kind of 3-for-1. It involves three girls, one kidnapper.
Is this what Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is based on?
I think so, maybe. So this story is about Michelle Knight, Amanda Berry, and Gina DeJesus.
DeJesus.
Daniel Benavides. You're the worst.
All right, let me start that
Daniel
over.
Daniel Benavides. Daniel.
De Jesus. Okay. This story is about Michelle Knight, Amanda Berry, and Gina DeJesus. Were all kidnapped by the same man between 2002 and 2004, and all were rescued in 2013. All three of them were abducted by the same guy by the name of Ariel Castrol and held in his Cleveland home for over a decade. Knight was 21 at the time, and she was the first one to go missing on August 23rd of 2002, and her family had thought she had ran away. 8 months after her disappearance on April 21st, 2003, Castro kidnapped a 16-year-old by the name of Amanda Berry under the guise of giving her a ride home from her job at Burger King.
Fuck.
Berry gave birth to their child, a daughter, in 2006.
Fuck.
A year later, De Jesus vanished while walking home from school on April 2nd of 2004. She was 14 years of age at the time.
They keep getting younger.
Both yeah. De Jesus and Berry accepted rides from Castro because they knew his daughters, whom they went to school with. After years of sexual assault, torture, and starvation, Berry was able to make contact with Castro's neighbors on May 6th of 2013, after he forgot to lock the front door and she escaped with her daughter. They immediately contacted the police and the two other women were rescued as well. Knight had been missing for 12 years, Castro for 10, and De Jesus for 9 years.
Jesus, dude.
And that's a typo. It shouldn't be Castro. It should be Berry was missing for 10 years. Castro pleaded guilty to the charges of kidnapping, rape, and assault of all three women and died by suicide in prison 1 month
into his life sentence. Yeah, he killed himself.
So, I mean,
so he
had, good riddance to bad rubbish, I guess.
He had like, daughters living in that house that he had women. No, maybe they were divorced. I just can't believe that he had these women chained up while also having daughters of his own.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's fucking despicable.
And like, he had people over all the time too. Like, they said that he would act real weird when they would come over.
Dude,
you know what Google Maps did is they blurred his house. That Philip Garrido guy.
The guy you were talking about?
Yeah. But I remember clearly seeing pictures of it's on that link that I just sent you guys. He follows.
Dude, there's van screenshots just of him. Straight up looks like a fucking
rape van. Yeah.
Jesus.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah. Dude,
that's terrifying. It's a terrifying rusty van. Jeez. So I'm hoping that the outcome is a little more like the first story that I told about the baby who was stolen and, you know, was just raised by people that she thought were her parents. Seems less traumatic. But, man, who knows what happened to these stolen kids? Anyway, thanks for hanging out and listening. Have you been watching anything cool?
Dude, yeah. Let's talk about that murderer on Middle Beach.
Oh. HBO
Max. Very well done podcast.
It's only HBO Max, I think. That's just.
Very, very well done podcast. It's
You mean show?
Well, documentary. Did I say podcast? Yeah. Very well done show, documentary. It's done by a
Madison.
A guy, a boy named Madison who lives in Madison, who has a mom named Deborah and a bunch of other women named Deborah.
He's got a mom named Deborah, a grandma named Deborah.
And an aunt named Conway.
And a sister named Deborah.
And their last name is Beach.
Yeah. Sandy Beach was their dad.
Anyways.
It's
very well done.
Besides everybody having crazy names, it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Aunt Conway.
I won't. It's about a murder.
Yeah, the guy's mom was murdered. The documentarian. He's a young man. He's only like 28 now. He made this movie over. He made the doc over the course of like 10 years. And it's interesting because he's really good at making a documentary, but he's also interviewing his family and people that he loves and cares about. So it's a really interesting line between personal subject and like not putting yourself too much in it because you're making a documentary. But he does a really good job, and I cannot wait to see what he does, like the next thing he does that's not about, not so close to him, because I feel like he's very good at this. Murder at Middle Beach. I don't think I know who did this.
I don't either. I have a theory.
Yeah, and apparently the cops do. We won't give away too much. It's a great show. Also, the Heaven's Gate show on HBO Max is a good time too. The cult.
I see the trailers for it. I haven't watched it yet though.
Yeah, it's a bonkers story. It's crazy. Cult of Cults. That's good. Also, we've been watching The Hardy Boys on Hulu.
Oh yeah,
fun the whole family. If you're missing that Stranger Things. And you need some kids on bikes in the 1980s discovering mysteries.
My kids cannot wait for the next season of Stranger Things.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell them not to hold their breath.
Yeah, I know.
Actually, they're doing a big event where they're all playing Dungeons & Dragons for charity. So you can put that in the whole cast. Cool.
I think when they interviewed the cast one of the cast members. I don't remember which one. But he said it's kind of a bummer because this is like the first season where they were ahead of schedule. He's like, we're never ahead of schedule. And like in March, they were already like filming and it was all getting like,
they didn't start. They had done everything, but actually start rolling.
They were in pre-production table.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. But at the same time, the Duffers were also saying in quarantine that they got to polish up their, middle episodes, because the way they work is they direct like the first and last of the season.
Yeah.
Because the middle of the season, they're working on writing the end. They're working on polishing those scripts so they can never direct the middle. Because you know, they're like working ahead. So they got to like polish up, like make sure all the scripts were like as best they could be. So it actually might be the best season.
Yeah.
at least writing and constructed, like, you know, because they had less time. They had more time to write and, you know,
like take beat out the
story points and stuff. So, yeah.
I think it's going to be worth the wait.
Oh, yeah. It always is. It never comes out every year. I mean,
no.
If it came out every year, we'd be on, like, this would be season 5 or something.
Yeah. And I'm glad it doesn't. I feel like they need to take their time with stuff like that. I'm okay with shows doing that. Like,
yeah. Or you could watch Riverdale and there's 25 episodes and maybe 5 of them are cool. You know,
I've never seen Riverdale.
It sucks, man. It's too sexy. That's actually why I like Hardy Boys. You can tell that they were kind of going for the same thing where they're like, oh, let's take this beloved franchise and let's kind of make it mysterious and, you know, murdery. Mm-hmm. But in Riverdale, everybody's just like, they're all 30 year olds playing teenagers and they're all fucking and, Hardy Boys is more like, it's got more of like a Goonies vibe. Like, you know, it's less sexy, which is good.
That's what's his name's fault.
Cole.
Oh gosh.
Cole Sprouse.
No.
Jughead.
The guy that I'm thinking about. Oh my God. How can I? Archie? Oh my God. I'm blanking on his name. Hold on. We're going to have to.
Archie?
No, not Archie.
What are you talking Jughead? About?
No, the fact that 30-year-olds are playing teenagers.
Danny Travolta?
Dude, John Hughes. I don't know how I couldn't remember that. John Hughes, one of my favorite 80s director, probably. Yes, dude. All of his movies are great. Every single one. Every John Hughes movie is a hit.
Yeah, they're good, but they're also fairy tales.
But like, that's okay. That's what I grew up on. They're like those 80s, like...
Yeah.
But those... what do you call them? Where they're growing up, they're just
coming of age.
Shit out. Coming of age. There you go.
Yeah. I mean,
anyways,
authenticity. I would say Fast Times at Ridgemont High might do a little better.
Yeah. But
Cameron Crowe. It's a little dark. There's abortion.
But those movies just have like such a special place in my heart because I love them so much.
Yeah. It's weird that John Hughes was able to write for those kids so well.
Well, also, so it's his fault that adults play teenagers because. He used to cast them that way. He says, but also back then, adults didn't look like they do now. I don't think like young adults.
Yeah, I don't know.
Get away with
Molly Ringwald was actually a teenager, and so was Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, but most of them were.
But
older.
Everyone else probably wasn't. You're right.
But yeah, I don't know about 30. I don't know about 30-year-olds.
It's fucking Grease. What are you talking about? Rizzo's like smoking cigarettes, and she's like 35.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just always child Sandy. Labor laws, right?
Sandy.
Yeah. Hardy Boys is really good. Fun for the whole family. What else? Ooh, The Stand starts tomorrow. I'm fucking excited.
Oh yeah, I heard
Stephen King's The Stand. I'm
really excited about that one.
It's good. It's God versus the Devil set across apocalyptic America. It's a fucking epic. It's Lord of the Rings in North America. It's the shit. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I really haven't been watching anything other than that. We watched The Undoing. We watched A Teacher.
We finished The Undoing.
What'd you think about that one? I thought it was good.
Yeah. When the end came, you realized that you were rooting for a bunch of shitbags. It's kind of cool. Like,
yeah.
Because I was talking to Dan about this. We were like, fuck yeah, that lawyer's destroying that little boy. And then we were like, oh, wow. We were rooting for the worst people. That fucked with me. Yeah,
I liked it, man. It kept me on my toes. I couldn't figure it out until the very end.
I was convinced that Nicole Kidman has had like too much plastic surgery because like I was like, she's not smiling, like she can't emote. And then I just realized that there's nothing to smile about in that show. Like because we watched The Prom on Netflix, which is full on musical, colorful. Oh,
so
and,
yeah, I.
And she smiled her way through. I was like, oh, she can be happy. She can smile.
I started it and Jaws was like, oh, man, I really want to watch this. But she just wasn't. She's like, I'm not in the mood for like a musical right now. Can we watch like something a little bit like more creepy? I was like, but she's like, but I definitely want to watch this. I was like, yeah,
dude, it's cheese, but it's really well done, expensive, charming.
It looks great on my new TV.
Dude, oh, fuck yeah. See that way. Yeah, it is. It's in 4K, and they fucking spent a lot of money. Like Andrew Rannells was talking about dancing in a huge backlot that was made to look like 1950s Hollywood or New York, and he was just like, God, Netflix has a lot of money.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
It's really charming.
The Netflix money.
Especially, it's weird. Ryan Murphy goes from Ratchet to The Prom. Like, I want him to make... Carry the musical into a movie. Come on, do it.
You know what's funny is so I didn't like musicals until you're going to laugh. The movie that got me was The Greatest Showman. That was like, oh my God.
I actually watched it. Did Dan tell you that we watched it?
It's so good.
It's good. I just don't like when the music is so modern and everything else is supposed to be like the 1940s.
Oh, dude.
You know, like all the songs sounded like pop hits mixed with Arcade Fire songs.
Dude,
you know what I mean? They all sounded like they were like produced by Taylor Swift. And
I disagree, man. I really like that.
No, the songs are good, but they just sound new. And then everything around it's like old timey.
Well, yeah.
That was my problem with with that Great Gatsby movie with Leonardo DiCaprio. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, this looks so cool, but why is Jay-Z playing in the background? This is fucking taking me out of it.
Yeah. I could agree with you on that.
But yeah, I smiled the whole way through Greatest Showman either way. But I just don't like when music sounds too modern and
And I just love that Zac Efron.
he's good. And, oh, I have one funny note about The Greatest Showman that Dan was laughing at. I was like, I like the way that the movie starts off with this wide-eyed little 12-year-old boy, and then it immediately cuts to a 50-year-old man played by Hugh Jackman. By You're Hugh like, Jackman. I feel like we missed a lot there in the middle. He went from 12 to 50.
Was it Modern Family that they talk about Hugh Jackman? Oh yeah, Hugh Jackman was just here. He was out here standing on his dick.
Oh, that's funny.
He's got a big dick.
Oh shit. Anyway, what any true crime podcasts?
No, I dude, not really. Like, I'm caught up on a bunch of stuff. Like, everybody's taking like a hiatus, the people I listen to.
Yeah.
There's like just doing shows on updates and like other shows. Like, it's pretty cool. Bob did a bunch of like this season he couldn't investigate anything, so he just had a bunch of like different podcast people come talk about different cases. So that was cool. I got to learn about some other podcasters, and
that's cool.
I haven't dove into their podcast yet.
I started listening to Small Town Dicks again. It's been a while. Have you heard those guys?
Mm-mm.
Really? Mm-mm. Oh man. It's hosted by Yeardley Smith. Fucking Lisa Simpson.
Oh yeah.
Lisa Simpson.
She has a podcast?
Yes. And it's it's actually one of my favorite true crime podcasts, because her two co-hosts are detectives Dan and Dave, and they're twin brothers.
That's funny.
They're twin brothers from Small Town USA. They don't tell you where they're from, and the whole show is actual cops, detectives, firemen, whatever, telling the stories. They change the names, and they don't give you the exact town, but they tell you exactly how they investigated the case, exactly what happened. Most of the time, they have endings, and it's not really unsolved stuff, but it's the actual detectives who do it, and it's fucking cool. It like,
wow.
Yeah, dude, it's Small Town Dicks, and it's Yardley Smith is like the human. They're like, wait, what's the? Because they'll get a little copy or a little like they'll talk like lingo, and she'll be like, wait, can you explain this? And she's like
like the everyman.
She's the everyman.
Every person.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good. There was this really good one. There was like a fire, a newer one where all these firemen were being shot at, and they didn't, like, the fire was so hot, they didn't even really realize it. And it was just like, it was cool because they had a couple firemen and the cops that responded, and it was their camaraderie was interesting.
The firemen were getting shot at?
Yeah.
And they were working?
Yeah. And the fire was so hot that they were hearing pops and it didn't click, you know? It's crazy. Yeah, Small Town Dicks. They probably don't need any help, but I'd want you to listen to it, Eli. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Boy, I wish somebody would talk about our podcast on their really big podcast.
Right? Yeah. That'd be cool. I wish she would talk about us, yeah.
Hey, Lisa Simpson.
We got a couple tweets. Somebody tweeted us. They were like, I like that the Stack Pack Boys are hot for holes.
Oh, yeah. Holes.
Oh, yeah.
He's out. Speaking of Paul Holmes, he's going to be on Bob Ruff's. You know, I told you he's interviewing people. He's the next episode that they're doing.
What? I feel like I know Paul Holmes technically because I met Bob Ruff over a Zoom call one time.
He's good people.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll be back. If you need any more recommendations, just send us a message on Instagram. I'll answer. For every mystery, there's someone somewhere who knows the truth. Perhaps that someone is listening, and perhaps that someone is you. Good night.